Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Garvin.
I'm Darcy Morse. Welcome to the Water Symposium. We're going to start right away. We have three talks in this section, and then there's actually a really nice water-related talk in the later section of the afternoon as well. I will be talking about a broad overview of water and how it relates to two concepts, the idea of planetary boundaries and the sustainable development goals of the United Nations. That will be followed by two examples of water issues, one by Tom Ackerman on climate change and one by Steve Hall on aquaculture. So without further ado, let me begin. So we're in Colorado, and that's one of the reasons why we have this water symposium this year. Every place you go, you cannot avoid water as an issue. On this map, you see a map of the watersheds of Colorado. And Colorado water comes from snowpack. So Coloradans keep track of the snowpack in each of their watersheds annually. This shows the rivers that come out of those various regions. But Colorado is divided by the mountainous area on the west end, the pre-mountain eastern front. And 80% of that population lives in the east. Two-thirds of the water in Colorado, because we're at the headwaters, actually leaves the state. 80% of the water flows west, which means that the East has a lot more people and a lot less water. Of the water used in Colorado, 89% is used by farms and ranches. However, Colorado has a rapidly increasing population. It has currently 5.3 million people, but they're expecting 8.5 million by 2050. Colorado receives about 20 inches a year on average. A desert gets about 6, but the state of Wisconsin gets about 43. So we're pretty dry, but not a desert. And climate change impacts loom. I will talk just about global water issues, but we'll use Colorado as our starting point to get an imagination of the central importance of water. And then I'll talk a little bit about what's happened globally in an attempt to alleviate poverty through the Millennium Development Goals, what happened to the environment during that process, what we're seeing with the idea of planetary boundaries, and how the UN has developed a set of sustainable development goals that are an attempt to pull people out of poverty while also limiting environmental degradation. And then we'll apply that to water specifically. Water is incredibly important. We see that in Colorado. I'm sure you see that in your home states as well. Globally, in January of 2017, the World Economic Forum put out the Global Risk Report. In that, water crises were listed as the third most important global risk. They came second after extreme weather events and before natural disasters. And just as we saw in Catherine Hayhoe's talk this morning about climate change, water crises trigger and exacerbate geopolitical and societal risks. That is, there are water conflicts around the globe. Now, for those of you who don't track with what's happening in global development, the time period from the year 2000 to 2015 was a very important one for the improvement in human flourishing around the globe. The UN and its member states came up with 8 development goals. They were very ambitious: to eradicate extreme hunger and poverty, to achieve universal education, promote gender equality, reduce child mortality, improve maternal health, combat various diseases, ensure environmental sustainability, and promote trade, which is what that global partnership for development is. We're going to look at two of those goals. The first goal was to halve the number of extremely poor people from the in the 10-year period. And what you would see is if we go all the way back to 1990, this is what happened. Extreme poverty has dropped dramatically. At the same time that we increased the global population by more than a billion people. That is mind-boggling. And a lot of it is because of both India and China becoming emerging economies and pulling out of poverty. At the same time, one specific goal was to halve by 2015 the proportion of population without sustainable access to safe drinking water and basic sanitation. And in fact, we made remarkable strides. 1.9 billion people gained access to piped drinking water since 1990, for example. And this target of halving the proportion without sustainable access was met 5 years ahead of schedule in 2010. 2.6 billion people got access to improved drinking water. 2.1 billion people got access to improved sanitation, leaving still another 2.4 billion using unimproved sanitation, and less than 1 billion people, but still quite a few, still practicing open defecation. Now, when you see that last bit, those are striking numbers, really lots of people. But if you compared to 25 years ago, the proportion of people that have better sanitation and better water is phenomenally improved. So I just want to say that that's a good thing. But here's one of the problems that happened in the Millennium Development Goals rolled out. And that was that number 7, the environmental sustainability goal, was the one that was least achieved. That is, we used a lot of energy, we increased fossil fuel use, and we degraded a lot of soil. Many other things degraded in that. And so one group that keeps track of how are we doing in relation to environmental sustainability is called the Global Footprint Network. They've produced this graphic. If you went online, you could actually see this as an animation. In the interest of time, I did not try to embed this and go through it. But this shows two things that we want to see. First, the Human Development Index is one way that globally we try to track how are people doing. It includes not only things like the average amount of money people have, but education, child mortality, gender equality, the rule of law, things that people need for human flourishing are put into an index. The second is a measure of the ecological footprint of societies. The bubbles are in proportion to the number of people. The very large one is the average of the whole world. This is India, here is China, and here is the United States. There is Luxembourg and Qatar. So, one of the things that you should see in this is that high human development is also tracks upward with an increase in resources globally. But for us to live safely, we actually have to have a high development but a low use of resources. This expresses the amount of the earth that each of us is using on average. So you can see that very few countries are in that safe zone. This is called the world biocapacity. So what does this mean? That means we've got to be heading for something radically different than what we currently are with development. So, concurrent with a change in thinking about how development works was a paper that came out by Rockström et al. In 2009. And they attempted to define for 9 different processes on the globe how much humans have affected that process and how much we can affect that process and still be safe for humanity. That is, have we done more than we can do and still survive? They concluded that for several features of the globe, we have overstepped a critical boundary and we have to walk it back if, as humans, we're going to flourish on this globe. Two of them that we have really overcrossed are nitrogen and phosphorus use and human manipulation of those, and the loss of biodiversity. You can see the red means we're in a very high risk. We're not sure about the risks on the others, but we're heading into them. And there's some that we are not able at this point to determine. So my question is, do the Sustainable Development Goals address planetary boundaries when we're talking about water issues? So in 2015, the UN voted to accept a series of 17 goals. They're more complicated. Each goal has a lot of targets under it, and they will control development globally from 2015 to 2030. I'm going to highlight a number of them that I think relate to water, but one of the things that you will see is that being sustainable is the more important part of the goals this time around. So, two sustainable development goals that specifically address water issues. One is number 6, that is, humans need access to clean water and sanitation. And number 14, which has to do with the use of ocean, seas, and marine resources, both the pollution of those and the overfishing that currently occurs. And then two that are more indirectly related, that is consumption and production patterns, because that will affect pollution a lot, and overconsumption, and then also climate change and its impacts in number 13. So I'm just going to look very quickly at three issues: water availability, water pollution, and the health of aquatic systems. So this is about water scarcity, and the UN has a whole water scarcity educational page if you want to look at more information there, but about 700 million people in 43 countries suffer from water scarcity. Two-thirds of the world's population live in areas that experience water scarcity greater than 1 month a year, but by 2025 we expect 1.8 billion to live in regions with absolute water scarcity, which is like these are defined as levels, and that's about half of the amount of water per person per day that we think you actually need to have. So, and two-thirds of the water will be under water stress. So there's water stress, water scarcity, and absolute water scarcity. That is in part because of this pattern. And this comes from FAO data. And one of the things that you'll see here is that global use of fresh water is increasing. Now, actually, it's not increasing as rapidly as the population, but you can see the population in the black line. And there's two things that I want you to know. One is agricultural withdrawal, and then the other is the purple. And the purple is evaporation from artificial lakes. So one of the things that we will see as climate change goes up and people attempt to preserve water by making dams and saving it in reservoirs is that in some cases in arid areas, half of the water in a reservoir can evaporate because of that process, and that's water that you can't use. But also, this will tell us that as we see the water used for agriculture topping off, we can see that our ability to produce food is going to be limited by water and the types of food we produce. We can also look at the renewable water resources, what's coming down and what we're pulling up. And here you should be able to see that in some parts of the world, a very high percent of the renewable water resources are already withdrawn. That's particularly true in the very dark red and sort of brick-colored areas. But another way to look at this is to ask about specific aquifers. And this takes us back to the idea of a footprint. So this map, which is from Gleason et al. in 2012 in Nature, shows a series of six particularly important aquifers, and it maps the size of the area related to the aquifer that would be required to recharge that aquifer at the rate we withdraw it. So what you should be able to see is that there are aquifers that we actually need 10 times more land receiving water to recharge that aquifer at the rate we're withdrawing. That means that even though in the planetary boundaries estimate of 2009, fresh water use was not in the yellow and red zone, what we're doing locally throughout the world is completely unsustainable with water. So, water scarcity solutions cannot simply be the increased drilling of wells. Now, I mention this because there are many Christian organizations, and you go to a music festival or anything, and they'll all be about raising water money to dig wells. Digging wells is fabulous, and the water is usually cleaner than taking it from a river. But what we just saw, the freshwater global problem is not just about people can't tap into water. We're tapping into that water, and we're taking a lot of it. So it actually has to be an intense water conservation effort. Now, here's the good part. It's a bad part, too. Globally, 80% of wastewater is neither treated nor reused. That means better use of wastewater is a low-hanging fruit. If we did treat and reuse that wastewater, we could help solve this water availability problem. Most problems related to water quality, not just amount, are caused by intensive agriculture, industrial production, mining, and untreated urban runoff and wastewater. 1.8 billion people use a source of drinking water that is contaminated or could be contaminated with feces. So as we move from availability into pollution, dealing with wastewater is going to be very important. But it's very tempting to think that it's just about human waste or animal waste. In fact, not all groundwater is drinkable. And in many parts of the world, there's naturally occurring pollutants, especially arsenic, sometimes selenium. So better treatment and reuse of wastewater, better use of water by agriculture, are going to be, and industry, are going to be an important part of this. Now let's talk about ecosystems. And let me just say, this could be its own talk. So in fact, all of these could be. So I am just giving you a taste. But estimates of ecosystem services humans use show that loss of ecosystems costs us even trillions of dollars a year globally. And that includes things like water bodies with harmful algal blooms or problems with marine environments. Now, I chose several just to mention here because I'm really acting as an introduction to the other papers. So Steve will talk about fisheries, and loss of biota is one of the big planetary boundary problems, and it's a big marine problem. I'll talk briefly about pollution, debris, and chemical pollution, and then Tom will talk about climate change. There's too much to even begin to address with aquatic ecosystems, but I will mention a couple of things. And one is that corals, for example, are being bleached. And if you follow the stories about the Great Barrier Reef, you will know that we are in the third great global coral bleaching event. This one is the longest in history. It has been, we're in the third year of it. And that that corals like these being shown here are dying. Coral reefs are, of course, the foundation of much of the marine ecosystems in their area. And so that is one of the reasons that we watch them. NOAA has a coral reef watch This is right now, July 18, 2017. This is a map of what they think the next 4 months will have. Worldwide, the places that are likely to have a 60% or greater chance of having a coral bleaching event are, and the level of which we have that concern. So you can see that we're expecting this this year. Marine pollution is another topic that I know some of you track with. These are just some pictures of the amount of debris that gets in the ocean and its impact on wildlife. But since about World War II, when plastics became more produced, we've had about 8.3 billion metric tons of plastic produced. 91% of that is not recycled. An estimated 5 trillion plastic bits are in the ocean, and you can see some of the impacts of that in these pictures. But one of the planetary boundaries that we discussed was the phosphorus and nitrogen, and this is a clear sign of our stepping out of that safe zone here. This is the second largest of the 550 dead zones that occur in the world oceans. This is the one in the Gulf of Mexico. This is from 2015, the map, but 2017, the dead zone is the size of New Jersey. So let's just wrap up. Let's get back to our sustainable development goals and our planetary boundaries. Remember that we had some that were directly about people and their use of water, and some that were about things that affect water systems. But we see that many of the concerns we have in the planetary boundaries are addressed in the sustainable development goals as they relate to water. This is back to Colorado. Beautiful picture of a Colorado stream. And I'll just conclude that water availability, quality, and water-dependent ecosystems are under stress and are related to planetary boundaries that humans need in order to thrive. Human efforts to alleviate poverty have to protect water habitats. The Sustainable Development Goals have components that can do that. Now, one person that could not be with us today is Bob Sluka. So he asked me if I would include this slide because he is working on this with Arosha International. They have put out a Hope for the Ocean, and they have a number of marine conservation projects. Certainly there's other organizations that are working with aquatic habitats and water resources as well, but I promised Bob that I would mention it. And that's all for me. Thank you very much for your attention, and I'll have time for a couple of questions. Yes?
Let's focus on North America. Right now, I understand that our aquifer in the Midwest, the Umaluka, or however you pronounce it, is drying up to the point where farmers can't get enough water to raise corn. This is just the beginning of the future. In 10 to 20 years, our agriculture is going to move north. Canada is warming, it's underpopulated, so isn't the solution to our problem is to encourage us, particularly young people, to move to Canada?
See if you make it.
Seems like every solution has its pluses and minuses, and a discussion of that might be bigger than our time today. Yes?
I was struck by one of your concluding remarks, which is that human development has, reaching the poor, has to be done in a way which conserves water and water resources. The only issue I would take with that is that it is not they who are most responsible for the pollution and degradation that has taken place already. It's not the developing world. It's not the people who are in need of those improved water resources that are producing the dominant impact on the planet. It is we in North America. And so we should be careful about the way we phrase these things.
Well, let me just be careful that development is done by everybody. So it's not they are developing and we are not. Everybody is developing and we're all together trying to improve the human condition around the world. I completely agree with that, but let me just say why I put it the way I did. So in Bolivia, in the year 2000, the International Monetary Fund, in order to give the Bolivian government a loan, told the Bolivian government that they had to privatize some of their water. And they sold the rights to local Bolivian water supplies to a large French water firm. This caused the 2000 water wars of Cochabamba. So there's no part of what I'm saying that is saying they need to do differently with their water. Because water systems, the amount of water owned by giant multinational corporations, and the impact of that, when people think we're developing, we're helping other people develop, but in fact then local people did not have access to their own water. That was a huge ethical dilemma. So please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I think we're on the same page.
So Israel has sort of stabilized its water situation, at least as I understand it, with massive desalination. And the typical domestic and irrigation units to some degree, even to the point of being able to export water to their neighbors or sell water to their neighbors. It just seems, you know, of course, that's an energy requirement, and we would need to take that energy cost seriously and do it in a clean way. But what do you think is the role, the future role of desalination? Because there's lots of water on the planet. It's just not fresh water.
I think desalinization won't be sustainable until we mostly are using solar energy to do it, and it makes the most sense in places with a lot of sun. The use of desalinization as a regular routine is so energy intensive that it does not make a great deal of sense to be thinking that that's the way to go. Somebody else had a question.
About the coral reefs, it looked like you had the die-off in 1998, again in 2010, and now we're in the third one. What stopped those other two?
The other two were triggered by El Nino events that naturally concluded.
Okay,
and I don't know why this is, except that we're just having very hot years.
And in a second thought, it seems to me that when I'm trying to open a conversation about global warming, I don't get anywhere. But if I try to talk about coral reefs, that's not deniable. Does that open up a lot of conversation?
If you're talking to people that can't hear global warming, talk about ocean acidification too. Yep, absolutely. Or sea level rise, because these are very, very clear things that are already affecting people all around the globe. Yep. Okay, one more question, and then I need to introduce Tom Ackerman.
Can we find a solution to water and climate change without addressing our increased population?
Oh, no, of course not. No. I mean, there's no way to increase. No.
I just wanted to make sure. It seems like nobody's discussing the population issue. We're seeing it piecewise, but it seems like it's all got to be solved at the same time.
Yeah, it does. But my time is up.